is Kevin Harlan, and he's always good for one of those on a Monday night. But here's the other reason that I love listening to Kevin on a Monday night on Westwood One. And tonight he wasn't with Kurt Warner. He was with Devin McCourty. It's interesting to hear his perspective, too. But I love it because it's the last game of the NFL weekend. It's the last game of the football weekend. I need a breather. Whew. Tuesday is the chance to come up for air, if you will. And so we have survived through 6 weeks. And man, considering where we started the NFL season, might be a fun question later on during the week. Considering where we started the NFL season, it's not what we expected in every regard. It rarely is, which is why I think 6 weeks, 8 weeks, it's a great chance to just survey the landscape. Stop. Take a breath and look back and see how horribly wrong we were. Because when you make predictions, the NFL laughs in your face. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Thanks so much for hanging out with us halfway through our Monday night into Tuesday morning show, depending upon where you are and how you're listening. I saw this stat online, and it actually doesn't surprise me, but it does give me pause, and I hope it doesn't apply to our show. I can understand there are reasons for it. I would say that there are times where I feel the same way. But a recent study was done by Gallup, so a widely respected organization. The question to people who are weighing in general, how much trust and confidence do you have in the mass media, newspapers, TV, and radio, when it comes to reporting the news fully, accurately, and fairly? And the options were a great deal, a fair amount, not very much, or none at all. Now, granted, we don't do news solely, right? I mean, there are plenty of nights where I'm giving you the objective facts of a story, where I'm laying out what I know about a story before I ever give you my opinion. And that really comes from my journalism background. I not only have multiple degrees in TV and radio and studied journalism, but I worked in news for the first 5+ years of my career before I made, actually longer than that, was doing news and sports for a time as well. But before I made the full-time jump to sports radio, I was working in news. And I tell people all the time, including young people that I mentor in this business, that at the time I didn't want to work in news. I wanted to be in full-time sports, but that experience and those years in news were so beneficial because they taught me how to be objective. They taught me how to tell a story. They taught me how to do research, of course, how to write to, and how to connect with an audience when it comes to a serious matter. Different than, say, how Bill Belichick hates the Jets. Okay, so we do have breaking news on our show a lot. We also have stories that require a journalistic integrity. And I could list about a bazillion of them, but one that comes to mind right away is the Ray Rice situation going back to 2014 in the NFL, and then all of the fallout of that with the NFL's domestic violence policies. I can think of the U.S. gymnastics scandal and the journalism that was required in that particular respect. And news and sports, they intersect a lot, but also sports are a microcosm of the rest of society. And so you will get news stories that have to be reported in a way that require integrity and require a trust from the audience. And so to get back to this Gallup poll, going back to the days before some of us were on the planet, I guess it started back in the early 70s. Okay, so the high point when it comes to trust in mass media, newspapers, TV, and radio, 70 to 71%. And over like a 3 to 4 year range, so from 1972 to 1976, this Gallup poll shows that Americans trusted mass media a great deal or a fair amount. 69 to 72% of Americans felt that way about mass media. Again, that's going back to the early 70s. Since then, I would say since 1976, according to this Gallup chart, the number has steadily declined and now has reached an all-time low. In 2024, according to Gallup, are you ready for this? 31% of Americans have a great deal or a fair amount of trust and confidence in the mass media. 31%, which if you flip that on its head, means 69% of the American public, 69% of our society has very little or no trust and confidence at all in mass media. And there's a couple of reactions to that. Number one, I said I understand it because I feel the same way at times, depending upon what mass media I choose to consume. I no longer believe, as I used to when I first got into the business, that broadcasters, journalists are objective all the time. Some are, but you can tell pretty quickly, especially if you work in this business, the ones that are not. Regardless of what their bias is, that's not the point. The point is that you can tell pretty quickly if you're a student of TV, radio, or in my case, that you have a lot of experience in the business. But I'm kind of blown away by the fact that it's so low, the trust and confidence. And it makes me sad, Pete. But also, there are times, I will readily admit, and I've said this on air before, when I am ashamed of the business that I work in, because what passes for journalistic integrity and objectivity anymore is grossly underrated. I mean, it's really sad the way that many people in our business have chosen to interpret journalism and what it means to be a journalist.
I'm actually surprised that number is high. That number is high to me.
31% is high?
Yep. With how everything is now, yes, that number is high. I will say this very objectively. All the news outlets have biases. In terms of, there's no outlet that's out there. You can't go to any outlet and have an objective viewpoint. It's gone. The days of Walter Cronkite are history. It's sad.
I do not remember Walter Cronkite. I wasn't watching the news when he was doing that. I was a big fan of Peter Jennings at the time, just because I loved how he presented.
All right, the days of Peter Jennings are gone.
But see, the thing is, I can't tell you they weren't biased, because at the time that I was listening to them, I was young, and I had no idea whether or not they were biased. I only know, and as I say, you listen long enough, you can tell that there are often biases or subjectivity in reporting. I wouldn't say there's none. I would think that would be over the top a little bit. But I do think that these days, a lot of times your major networks and your major outlets, they are trying to appeal to a certain audience. And so in that case, but I feel like that's not how it should be when it comes to mass media. It should be that way, for instance, when you're listening to the Bills radio network, when you're listening to the Dodgers radio network, when you're listening to a couple of broadcasters or a group of broadcasters that are hired by the team or that are speaking to a primarily friendly audience, if you will. And I learned that when I first got into play-by-play. I remember I thought I was being objective and doing my job the way that I was supposed to. And I made a comment about a particular basketball player that a parent heard and took exception with and went to the coach, and I got reamed out. And what I was reminded is that you need to know your audience. If you're speaking to an audience that's primarily fans of a particular team, well then yes, you need to be on that team's side. A homer, but you need to be seeing it through your, let's say, your silver and black colored glasses if I'm working for the Raiders, that type of thing. But when it comes to talking heads that sit at a desk, there should be no bias. It should be objectivity so people can decide for themselves. But yeah, that's a lost art, sadly.
And I think that was the fate of objectivity was done in by the 24-hour news cycle. That's just me.
Why?
I feel like there's a need for content, and so you're going to stretch a little bit of what is objective and what isn't.
All right. That's interesting. So yeah, 31%, that's the trust and confidence rate in mass media right now over overview. Maybe you have specific outlets that you trust more in. Maybe you just don't care as long as someone is giving you the news and sees it the same way that you do. Right. So maybe you don't care if they're biased for you. That's fine. Or they agree with your views, or they're reporting the news through the rose-colored glasses that you're wearing. Well, then you're good with it. But I really do hope that people listen to our show and believe there's integrity. I mean, I understand, of course, that sports is completely different. And fandom very often takes all of our logic and our rationale and chucks it out the window. Sports fans will never be accused of being rational or logical or fair. And the number of times that play-by-play announcers like Joe Buck or Jim Nantz or... for heaven's sakes, like name any of them these days that are doing baseball games. They're all accused of having a bias because fans get so incensed if things are not going their way that they cannot see it except to believe that the announcers are biased except against their people. I mean, even doing a national radio show, how often I get accused of being biased when I don't have time for that. When you're speaking to a national audience, you've got to be able to relate to all fan bases. And so, yeah, at times fans get over the top with that. And so I know there are people that hear bias where maybe there isn't some. But I think more often than not, we gravitate toward outlets that maybe interpret the news the way that we do. It's just to have no trust and confidence. 31% of our population is very low. And again, significantly, it has declined steadily since the early 70s.
And that number might go down in a month.
Maybe. Maybe not.
It might.
I mean, our nation is almost divided in half when it comes to our politics. Mm-hmm. So you could think that maybe half the country would feel that way, but the other half might not. And we do not talk politics on the show, not even election night. And for that reason, I will be taking off election night. And there's really not much going on in sports either. Really, the leagues kind of clear the deck for the most part because they want their athletes to vote and they want their coaches and their staff members and all that to be able to take advantage of what is an American institution, at least I hope. So on that night, I won't be here. And I think producer Pete, you mentioned you might not be here either.
I might not, but I'm not sure yet.
Will be here on your own. I'm actually really excited because I'm such a news junkie. I enjoy election night as tense as it is. And I do get the chance for the first time to watch it with my husband at home. So I'm really looking forward to that.
I think one of the reasons why I might work it is because if I don't like the outcome, I don't know if my wife will like me around.
Oh, gotcha. Well, see, I kind of feel like if I don't like the outcome, I won't be any good as a radio host that night.
That's true.
So I kind of feel like it's better for me to be home. But also, I do enjoy that night. I love watching election coverage. Like I said, I'm a junkie for the maps. Give me the maps. I need to see the maps.
Colors. Lots of colors.
It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, 855-212-4227. I'm interested if that's you. If you don't have any confidence or trust in mass media, again, we're mostly talking about news outlets, but still, if you think that it's a lost art, objectivity and integrity in journalism, I mean, it makes me sad and I would love to hear from you. I'm not sure it's possible for us to earn back the trust. And I do include us in that because I'm still a journalist. That's my heart and that's my base. Just a couple of quick things before we get to our first break here. We had a game in LA that was the earliest of the three sporting events on Monday. That was game two of the NLCS. And we had sat here 24 hours ago and talked about the way that the Dodgers navigated their pitching, 33 scoreless innings from the Mets all the way back to the Padres. But it did not last very long because the MVP of the Mets had a different narrative.
And the 2-2 to Lindor, swinging a high fly ball, well hit to right. Betts going back, this might go, and it is gone, a home run. Francisco Lindor just pulled a Lenny Dykstra as he leads off a game in the postseason with a home run, and the Mets take an instant 1-0 lead.
That's the call with Howie Rose on Mets Radio. Remember, this was a bullpen start for the Los Angeles Dodgers, and while Dave Roberts and his pitching staff have been masterful at pushing the right buttons and putting the right guys out there, this one went horribly off the rails. Now, Mark Vientos, he got a little bit of extra motivation when he came up to bat in the next frame in the second inning, and ahead of him, the Dodgers had intentionally walked Francisco Lindor to load the bases.
Here's the payoff pitch. Swing and a drive in the air. Pretty well hit right center. Paez back at the track near the wall. It is gone! A grand slam for Mark Vientos on a 3-2 pitch. He clears the bases, hitting it into the pavilion in right center field. Mark Vientos with the Mets' second grand slam of the postseason, his third postseason home run, has given the Mets a 6-0 lead.
I want them to walk Lindor in that situation and put me up there. And at that point, I was just, let me simplify the game. Just get one run in, get a walk, like whatever I can do to add another run to the score.
These are the pumpkin playoff Mets. They always find a way to fight, scratch, claw back into it. And yeah, the bats, we've had some dramatic at-bats, some dramatic home runs from the Mets in this playoff run so far, and they're able to even this NLCS at one apiece. And so they have now probably have, well, maybe not. Maybe they haven't already made the flight. I don't know their travel plans, but Mets and Dodgers, they will settle in to Citi Field for this 2-3-2 format, which means technically if the Mets win out this game, the series, never goes back to Chavez Ravine. I would say that's unlikely, except this is back to form for the Dodgers in terms of how they've struggled to find quality starts. Now, this was not a quality start. The bullpen, it was blasted, and Dave Roberts had to hope that his offense could conjure up enough runs. That wasn't the case against Sean Manaea. The Mets were able to slam the door and preserve that lead with their own pitching staff. But the Dodgers may have to end up doing this again. Dave Roberts didn't really want to answer that question about another bullpen start, but that's the possibility with the Dodgers not having a full rotation.
Just trying to process today, make sure that we learn from some of the things that we got to get better at. And then, we have Walker going tomorrow with a fresh, leveragey pen and focus on winning game three.
Okay, I will admit, I've never heard the term leveragey. A fresh, leveragey pen. Did I hear that right? Or am I just missing what Dave Roberts had to say? Fresh, leveragey?
Fresh, leveragey pen.
Fresh, leveragey.
Yeah, leveragey. Have you heard of leveragey?
A fresh leveragey pen.
Fresh leveragey pen.
Like I like a Mont Blanc pen.
That's nice. So the Mets are able to put 7 runs on the board on 10 hits. And yeah, this was started by their MVP, Francisco Lindor. And if nothing else, he's the guy that sets the tone. When the Mets desperately need a big hit, he seems to come through over and over again.
I'll be lying to you if I say, I have no pressure. We have pressure. I'm playing the game in this type of environment, playing the game in this late in the year. There is pressure. You just have to stay within yourself and go out there and try to execute.
They certainly have done that. And as much as you could say the Mets are playing with house money, I know Pete has actually uttered that phrase, and it's probably true if you look big picture. Doesn't matter. You're here now. You're one of the final four teams, so why not them? I think any of these four teams, the way we see them get hot, the different strengths and weaknesses that they have, it's going to be an interesting combo. And I feel so differently about 7-game series. I know they're not marathons. They could be over. I mean, this one could be over in 5 games. We could, technically, I'm not saying I think it'll happen with Cleveland, but there could be a sweep in the other. We don't know that they're going to go any deeper than the 5-game series, but it feels more like a marathon. There's more real estate here. It's more of a grind. And yeah, now you're talking about survival and a war of attrition, really, among these four teams. So, yeah, kind of interesting to think about the combos. Could we end up with a Subway Series? New York local radio, they're crowing about the fact that each team is just 3 wins away from a Subway Series. When was that, 2000?
2000. That was the last time they were both in the CSs, too.
Subway Series is a possibility. Dodgers and Guardians is a possibility. Dodgers and Yankees. Could you imagine Major League Baseball executives they might not be able to sleep for 2 weeks because they'd be so over the moon about that. And then, of course, we could have Mets, Guardians as well. And I think the neat element of Mets and Guardians. I mean, the Guardians having gotten so close to a World Series in 2016 and not coming away with that title, and the Mets not since when? 69?
86.
Oh, 86. Oh, that's right. I forgot. Oh my gosh. Yes. How could I forget? As someone who grew up in New England, Bill Buckner. Yeah. So the Mets haven't been there in a long time. The Guardians / Indians fan base. I mean, they're desperate and hungry for a title. So that one could be fun just because I think you'd have a bunch of people jumping on board because it would mean the end of a drought for one of those franchises that is so excited about their baseball teams.
And the last time they were there, the Guardians, Francisco Lindor was their star player. So,
oh my gosh, that's true.
Yes.
I forgot about that. And good call, Pete.
I don't remember if it was his rookie year, but or his
His introduction to the national stage.
Yeah, it was.
He dazzled in that playoff run, including the World Series against the Cubs. All right, coming up, we've got Dan Campbell talking about Aiden Hutchinson. Mike McCarthy did answer questions from the media on Monday. Nick Sirianni did an about face, which I think is kind of wussy myself. and a story that I've been waiting to talk about. Not a whole lot to say about it, but it is notable, and so I do want to mention it at least. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Good morning to you. I hope that you have trust and confidence in our radio show and in the Infinity Sports Network.
Oh, I haven't even considered that. I'm not considering that. Just so you're clear, not considering that.
But you've done it. Don't
I wouldn't be a hypothetical in that matter. Do you think I'm an idiot? Do you? Okay, well, I'm not going to hypothetical with you about when I'd consider coaching change in light of the timing we're sitting here with. I'm not at all.
Off the field, on the money, and after hours, it's time to talk football with Amy Lawrence.
The unmistakable voice of Jerry Jones, and I had shared that quote with you from Sunday afternoon when he, as he always does, holds court following a Cowboys game and was asked about making a change during the bye week and replacing Mike McCarthy. He said, unequivocally, he is not considering that, and then got a little spicy when reporters attempted to follow up. Of course, that tends to happen when you hold multiple press conferences per week, and in this case, it's after the worst home loss in the, history of Jerry Jones owning the team. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
You think I'm an idiot? Do you?
I don't think that they're supposed to answer that question. I believe that was rhetorical. On Twix, A-Law Radio, also on our Facebook page. Oh, I didn't put it up there yet. Sorry. I will. The Touchdown of the Week poll is now available for you to vote. Either one of our accounts at Amy After Hours is our show account. All of our polls originate there. And I appreciate that you continue to vote because it's a lot of fun this time of the year. There's plenty of real estate when it comes to MVPs, when it comes to TD of the week. So we'll let you hear those candidates a little bit later on. The biggest story coming out of the Cowboys game after that embarrassing, humiliating loss at AT&T Stadium is that they're still stuck in this place where, they're beating the teams they're supposed to beat, I guess on paper, getting those wins, not convincing wins other than the game against the Browns. They do have three victories, but in their losses at home, they've been, they've just almost been sacrificial lambs. It's been so bad against the Saints, and then this game against the Lions. It's been rough for the fans who show up there at AT&T Stadium. Embarrassing, to be sure. And Mike McCarthy, he's got to be feeling the pressure, of course. He's not the only one. There are a lot of highly paid players on this roster. Jerry Jones, no doubt, as the general manager, understands there's a sense of urgency. And yet here they are in the bye week, and it sounds as though the biggest thing on their mind is ways to fix it.
If we totally don't believe it's about us, and it'll always be about us, and play to who we are, what we do, how we do it, then we're not going to get to where we want to go. And I believe we will. And I think this is a opportunity that we relish. I know I relish it, and I think they do too. So this is a place that a lot of good can come out of it. And been here before, and I think this is a really good opportunity for our leadership. I think it's an excellent opportunity for our young guys to continue to play. It's an excellent opportunity for these guys to build off of some of the things they have done well. And because this will pay forward. In my experience, it always has. When you play young players this much and you play this many different players this much, I think the long game definitely has a chance to be very bright.
Interesting to hear Mike McCarthy say something similar to what Dak Prescott did on Sunday about how we've been here before. I've been here before. It's not the end of the world. Now, I don't think it was the same year. It wasn't McCarthy and Dak together, but just that they were able to salvage a season, even though it started in the tank, so to speak, and it started in a very dark place. Yeah, I mean, they are 3-3. It's not as though they're 1-5. And yet it does feel like the sky is falling for a lot of Cowboys fans. Gosh, we shared the conversation with Babe Laufenberg on our social media, and the responses I got from people, of course, not everyone listened to the interview, but the responses I got from people just seeing the photo from the game at AT&T Stadium on Sunday afternoon. So for now, it's, I'm going to say it's status quo because they're working to make it better, but there are not going to be sweeping changes. Another story that came out of that game, of course, the loss of Aiden Hutchinson, the last we knew, staying behind in Dallas to have surgery on his broken leg.
Hutch is a captain for us, highly productive player, great teammate, does everything right, and was having one hell of a game, one hell of a season. And so, look, that it hurts. It hurts to lose somebody like him, not only the player, but the person that's in that locker room, the leader that he is.
Now, there was this question to Dan Campbell about whether or not Aiden Hutchinson could be available if, it's a fairly good chance, the Lions make the postseason. And what about if they can get to the Super Bowl?
4 to 6 months, I would never count Hutch out, ever. So, yeah, probably, you know, long road, but I would never count him out. And I would say if anybody can make it back, it'd be him.
There's actually another clip from Dan Campbell that I saw on Monday as I was listening to some of his comments. I did like it on my social so that I can go back and get it. We'll have to get it for tomorrow night's show. A really thoughtful answer about how they move forward. And it's clear that when Campbell talks about his locker room, the confidence and belief he has in them is reciprocated because they feel the same way about him and about the coaching staff. And it's clear his spirit, his energy, his dedication, his commitment, but also how he treats them and the way that he believes in them is one major reason why they've been able to build a winning culture there. I mean, I'd run through a wall for this guy. You can imagine how his players feel. But yeah, there's a genuine respect there, like a professional respect. But also, you can tell that he really cares about his guys. And that's obvious to them too, right? And so they're buying in for a lot of reasons. But relationship is one piece of that. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. So Dan Campbell, not going to rule it out. And Aiden Hutchinson, he's got the best medical care and rehab and recovery treatment and options available to him. So I wouldn't put anything past a world-class athlete. As for Jim Harbaugh, he's also dealing with doctors, but for a different reason. He left the game for what he called his irregular heartbeat on Sunday in Denver. And so he was getting a lot of questions about how he's going to handle this arrhythmia moving forward.
Have a real good understanding of you know, just what to do, how it needs to be treated with medicine or an ablation or both. So now, for anybody that could be out there hearing this, or if I'm butchering this in any way, I apologize, but yeah, pretty confident on this one that I know what it is and how to deal with it. But as always, we'll trust the doctors to, and they'll tell me what to do.
He actually made a couple of jokes about the fact that he was having this irregular heartbeat or this heart issue because of what he was seeing on the field. You know Harbaugh, he's quirky, and he'll make those kinds of jokes. But I did appreciate his thoughtfulness and also the fact that he was relatively serious, sort of. I mean, you'll hear the way he finishes. I think there are some people, and this would include me, when they're in an uncomfortable situation, they resort to humor. And in Harbaugh's case, he was asked about his family. And that includes his brother John, but includes his wife and his kids that moved with him to L.A. And he was asked whether or not they understand his commitment to being on the sidelines.
They know how deeply committed I am. It would take my heart stopping.
Oh, dear.
For me not to be out there on the sideline.
No, 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 no. We don't need to go there. We don't need it to be that drastic. There are a lot of humans, a lot of Americans that live with an irregular heartbeat. I can imagine it's scary at the time, but I've got a couple of friends, and they know what triggers that irregular heartbeat. For one of them, it's stress and it's anxiety that seems to trigger it, but that's not the only time that she feels it. So I can imagine that it was a little unsettling there on the sidelines, certainly unsettling for his family as they hear it. But it's good that he is willing to comply whatever the doctors and the medical team tell him so that he can make sure it doesn't remain an issue moving forward. Yeah, that's tough to have to leave the sidelines in the middle of the game and get checked out. And I think he had IV, he had fluids, and then was able to return to the sidelines. But we all know, and I'm not saying this tongue in cheek or in jest, I'm being serious. We all know that, not from personal experience, but based on following sports, coaching is hard on the ticker. It's not for the faint of heart. The stress, the lack of sleep, in many cases, the lack of exercise or healthy nutrition. I mean, it's almost ironic that the guys who are leading teams, who are full of world-class athletes, who have nutritionists and mental health coaches and the best food and medical care and athletic training facilities that money can buy, there are these coaches who spend hours and hours and hours trying to figure out ways to win and preserve their jobs, and yet they don't often take care of themselves. In a field in which you have to be as healthy as possible, they don't often take care of themselves, which I think is somewhat ironic. But it is definitely an association and a profession that's hard on the ticker. For fans too, I know, but not quite the same thing. All right, coming up a little bit more, I told you there's one story I've been waiting to share with you. I've been checking and wondering when it was going to happen. It finally did on Monday, which is amazing. And also, we've got an apology from one Nick Sirianni. Why? Why are you doing it about face? Own it, dude. Own it. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Here's our latest sports update. And here's Peter Schwartz.
Infinity Sports Network. Sports Flash.
This report sponsored by Progressive Insurance. Protect your family, your phone, and your furry friends with life, electronic device, and pet health insurance. Let's lead off with the baseball playoffs. We'll start in New York. A terrific start from Carlos Rodon in game one of the American League Championship Series.
And ready to deal 0-2. Struck him out swinging. Wow, what a night for Rodon. That's 9 strikeouts in 5 innings. No runs, 2 hits, and 9 strikeouts. At the end of 4.5, 4-0 Yanks.
John Sterling on Yankees Radio. Yankees take game 1 of the ALCS, beat the Guardians 5-2. Carlos Rodon allowed a run and 3 hits while striking out 9 over 6 innings. Juan Soto and Giancarlo Stanton hit home runs for the Yankees. Game 2 is Tuesday night in New York. Now to Los Angeles, and a grand day for the Mets.
Here's the payoff pitch. Swing and a drive in the air, pretty well hit right center. Paez back at the track, near the wall. It is gone! A grand slam for Mark Vientos.
Howie Rose on Mets Radio. Mets win game 2 of the NLCS 7-3. The series tied at a game apiece. Francisco Lindor led off the game with a home run. Game 3 Wednesday in New York. Now to Monday Night Football. The Bills were leading the Jets by 3 points late in the fourth quarter, but the Jets had the ball.
Rodgers in the shotgun, Hall to his right on 3rd and 16. Back to pass. Rodgers looking to load up. Fires deep. Rainbow down the field looking for Mike Williams. And it's intercepted. Taron Johnson, welcome back. A humongous interception by the nickel corner.
Chris Brown on Bills Radio. The Bills beat the Jets 23-20. Also from the NFL, Lions defensive end Aiden Hutchinson underwent successful surgery Sunday night to repair a fractured tibia and fibula. There is no timetable set for his return. I'm Peter Schwartz.
The Infinity Sports Network is on your smart speaker. All you have to say is, play Infinity Sports Network. That's it. Play Infinity Sports Network.
At the 50. Ball's at the 45. Barkley to his right. Eagles moving the football. Hurts again in the gun. He's back. He's looking. He fires. Wide open. Smith. 30. 25. 20. 15. 10. 5. Touchdown. Devontae Smith.
Hello.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
I am not bringing back the Devontae Smith touchdown, the fourth quarter touchdown for the Eagles with Merrill Reese and Mike Quick, simply because it's one of our candidates for TD of the week. Though it's an easy way to remind you that the poll is up at Amy After Hours. But I bring it back because Nick Sirianni is doing a mea culpa. And I don't get this. I understand that you're going to get some flack for jawing with Eagles fans. Who cares? Philadelphia fans, like many fan bases, they are hard on their own teams. They're booing at times. They're letting coaches and players hear it. Worst case scenarios, they throw things on the field. Fans, I feel like if you're going to be a fan base that boos, and I'm not saying it's only the Eagles, but of course the Eagles are vocal. Eagles fans are vocal. Why can't Sirianni stand there with his hand around his ear, cupping his ear as if to say, let me hear you now. How do you like me now? What is the big deal? Why can't the same rules apply to the coach? But for some reason, he's apologizing.
I was trying to bring energy yesterday, enthusiasm yesterday. And I'm sorry and disappointed on how my energy was directed at the end of the game. And, you know, my energy should be all in on coaching, motivating, right, and celebrating with our guys. And so, you know, that's, you know, and I got to have better wisdom and discernment of when to use that energy. And that wasn't the time.
Why are you being a wuss? No, there is absolutely nothing wrong with you gesturing to the crowd and saying, yo, you guys have been so hard on us. You've been so hard on me. How do you like me now? No. I don't normally yell on the show, but this has got me fired up because it's ridiculous that he should be apologizing. What, is someone offended because Nick Sirianni was giving the fans a little clap back? I mean, come on, Pete. This is ridiculous for you to apologize. Who's offended by that?
He doesn't need to apologize. I'm more offended at the fact that he was getting all crazy after beating the Browns. I mean, I wouldn't be going.
That it's just be the, pent up energy.
It wouldn't be the game I picked to go crazy over. They almost lost that game.
He was yelling. He was gesturing toward fans. So what? They've been doing the same thing to him. Players do it all the time. I do not in any way think that he should be apologizing for being fired up about a win. And any fan who's offended by him gesturing needs to give us evidence that he or she has never booed, has never yelled anything untoward at the team, has never expressed displeasure or disappointment. Come on, it goes both ways.
Yeah, if he's going to do that, he should go all in on it or don't do it at all.
The fans were booing loudly at the stadium on Sunday. I have no issues with him doing a little gesturing and being fired up. None whatsoever.
Yeah, it's fine. Whatever floats his boat. But I think they got more. I don't think they're. I think they got more problems than the fans.
Oh, for sure. It would be different if he was flipping them off. If he was
being obscene,
right? That type of thing. To the best of my knowledge, he was not. He just kind of expressing his, I would say, passion, and his team told him to be more energetic. So I'm good with that. All right. This is a story that I've been really looking forward to talking about. I was waiting. I didn't know when it would happen. Kind of quietly been following this and looking for his name to pop up. Guess what, you guys? Rookie wide receiver Ricky Pearsall returned to practice with the San Francisco 49ers this week or this weekend for the first time since he was shot in the summertime in San Francisco. And they've been wanting to get him back out there on the field. Of course, needed to heal because he had a bullet go through his chest. But yes, he was back out there. He was practicing. And I think that's amazing. It's a human triumph story. It's not just about football. It's so much bigger than that. It's about surviving in maybe one of the worst moments of his life and being able to rejoin his teammates and do what he loves and, of course, get their support. And I know it's not as drastic as what happened with Damar Hamlin, but do you remember how excited everyone was to welcome Damar back, even to the facilities, and then to see him back on the football field? Again, not the same. Pearsall was never in... Well, I don't say he was never in danger of dying, but after he was shot, it was a through and through. He was walking around himself to the ambulance and, you know, had a sweatshirt or a shirt over him to cover the bullet hole. But scary as hell, obviously. And now here he is getting back to football. At least one of his teammates, O-lineman Dominic Puna, was certainly happy to see him back out there on the field.
I saw him warming up out there. It just brought a smile to my face because I don't know personally how much he's been through, but from the outside, I can only imagine how much he's been through. So to see him out there, he seemed as happy as can be. And then to see him running around with the team was just awesome.
Incredible. 44 days after he was shot in the chest in downtown San Francisco. You remember he was signing autographs and he was walking through a popular area of the city, ended up getting shot by a teenager who was trying to rob him. And so for him to be back on the field is not just survival and life, but the fact that he's so happy to get back out there. The reports were that he was dancing around during stretching and the guys were dancing with him. He even jumped in the middle of the huddle before drills began. Put yourself in his shoes if you possibly can and think about how that must feel, that moment to be surrounded by your teammates who are so happy for you and to feel that joy. Another one of his teammates said, quote, it meant everything. All the adversity that's kind of been thrown at him in the past few months, just for him to overcome everything and for him to fight and to grind to get back into football shape. It was a great feeling for everybody to see him put that helmet back on, put that jersey back on, and for him to go out there and be part of the team. I love it. It was a delay to the start of his career, but I hope we'll get to see him on the field in a game very soon. But that's awesome. From NBC Bay Area, let's go, Ricky Pearsall. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.